I'll play I'll Remember April. It's one of my favorite standards, okay? All right.
This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the talented jazz players who either grew up or live today in New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingalls. That's Michael Anthony, who spent 20 years in Los Angeles as one of the top session guitarists in the business. He moved to New Mexico in 1980 with his wife Kathy, who had family here. Since then, Michael's been a fixture on the local jazz scene, fronting various combos and teaching guitar to aspiring high school players. Mark Weber talked with Michael Anthony in the studio.
Michael, tell us what the life of a Los Angeles studio musician in the 1970s was like.
Well, I was kind of on top of the world. I was making very, very good money and very busy, and at the same time being challenged every day because I was amongst the world's greatest musicians in that setting. And many times I was running from one record date to maybe a TV commercial close together and being nervous about being late, things like that. That was sort of the anxious side of it, but it was a great thing. I felt like I went to the greatest university in the world musically.
So you grew up in Brooklyn?
Yes, I was born and grew up in Brooklyn until I was 14. And then I moved to California, Los Angeles, California, and that's when I started to play the guitar. But I recall, I often forget this, that I started really, my interest in music started way early with regard to, I used to pick tunes out on the harmonica from the radio, listening to the pop radio. My folks bought me a chromatic harmonica for one Christmas when I was 11 years old. And I wasn't interested in the guitar at all at that point. So it was later, it wasn't until I moved to California that I then heard Les Paul and Bo Diddley. How do you like that combination?
Yeah.
And then I went to my folks and says, hey, folks, I want to play the guitar. And they were happy to oblige me. So,
can you play Bo Diddley stuff?
No.
that's quite a leap.
Thing, here we go, first example. The only thing I remembered was the Bo Diddley beat. That was a sample, and of course they did all that with the wah-wah pedal, etc. And they ended up calling that the Bo Diddley beat, and that's often called hand jive beat now.
So in the 70s, you were, let me read off all these TV shows you were on. You were on the Dean Martin Show, Laverne and Shirley, The Dukes of Hazzard, Sonny and Cher, The Carol Burnett Show, Dallas, Knott's Landing, The Barbra Streisand Special. You were on the movie New York, New York.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's me playing my baritone ukulele. I remember when we did that. That was at A&M Records on La Cienega Boulevard, and that's owned by. Who was the guy that was the head of? Now I can't. Now I'm having memory lapses. The head of the. Herb Alpert owned A&M Records with somebody Moss. We did it there and did the whole movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid there. That was B.J. Thomas.
You also were on another big hit with Diana Ross, and you got a guitar solo on that.
That's right. Yeah, that was the theme from the movie Mahogany, and the name of the song was called "Do You Know Where You're Going," and. I played the acoustic guitar that you would hear featured. There are some acoustic fills, and that's Michael.
So you worked a steady gig on the Carol Burnett television show, and you met your wife there.
Correct.
This is the 70s.
Early 70s.
Early 70s. Kathy.
Correct.
She was a dancer.
Right.
On the show.
Right.
In Hollywood, your actual hands-on mentors were people like Joe Pass and Howard Roberts.
Right.
Tell us about Joe and you.
when I first heard Joe play, I mean, I went to a record booth, and you could go into the booth and play a little bit of, you know, things. And I heard this guy, and I thought, who the heck is that? And it turned out to be Joe Pass. Then within the same month or so, I'm watching the Jack Parr show and the Tonight Show, and I remember he played. Yeah. The song is You at a blistering tempo, and he just played the heck out of that thing. It was just amazing. Down the road, then Joe started doing some studio work. So then occasionally I met Joe in the studios, and then I go here and play at Dante's. So I got to know him amongst the guitarists. I never took official lessons from him, but what he would do is we would be on a job, and he would say to me, we were on a morning job once, and he said, hey, Mike, what are you doing after the job, after the gig? And I'd say, nothing, Joe. I'd be free that afternoon. He said, come on over the house. So I go over the house, and we played for 3 hours, and I got an unofficial lesson where I got to pick his brain. I'd ask him about picking. I'd ask him about, you know, he'd say, well, what are you doing on this chord? C minor. And I'd be all nervous, and I'd fumble, and he'd say, well, why don't you try something like this? And, of course, he would just rip through something beautiful, and I'd say something like, but that's too hard. I can't play that. That's too hard. And he says, no. He says, I don't play anything hard. That's what he always used to say, that he doesn't play anything hard. Well, to him, it wasn't hard, I guess. So he was such a natural with a fantastic ear.
Is there one Joe Pass record that means a lot to you?
They're all pretty great, but there's the one. It's called Django. It's called Django, or For Django. The first tune is Django on there. That thing swings from beat one, that album. It burns.
What do we mean by the term swing?
Oh, boy.
That's a tough one.
That's always a tough hits. One.
Well, it's not, okay, let me, this, I'll give you some things to work with. It's not really syncopation, is it?
No, I would say, now that I'm thinking about it, swing is something that goes beyond your mind. It goes right to the cells of your body. Right to the core, right into your bones, and you can just feel it vibrating right inside of you. You can't analyze it. You're not going to analyze it. It's beyond words, and you can feel that pulse, and you start moving your body.
But it's a sense.
And it could be, you know, jazz is the connection with swing that we all relate with, but classical music can swing. Other types of music can swing. Rock music certainly swings. It rocks. but when any music gets into a certain groove to where suddenly you're taken up with it, it's swinging.
But the swing element, the actual to analyze it, it's still a displacement of a beat in a sense in terms of like holding it back and
well,
a little bit forward.
Well, that's what we call jazz rhythms. Jazz rhythms have what we call syncopations or anticipation. And a syncopation is like this. I'm going to count four, and before... I'm going to count four and then play a beat right on one. One, two, three, four. Right? Now, if I syncopate that or anticipate it, I'm going to play it beforehand. One, two, three, four. Boop, boop. See, now it's got a little push to it. It's also called a push beat. And it could come after one as well. It could be like this. Three, four, one. One. So that there certainly has a swing quality to it.
Your other great mentor, Howard Roberts, on the guitar.
Yes.
As a Los Angeles studio musician.
Yeah, yeah.
How would he swing?
Well, Howard was another one of those guys, but he had many dimensions to him, including humor. He would be playing, and suddenly he'd quote some funny little theme in the middle of a, you know, real burning rhythm changes tune or something like that. His sound would be something a little bit like this, maybe. Let's see if we had something like this. Two, three, four. So he would do some things like that. He'd get a big high reach in there. You're not expecting to hear something like that. Well, he'll pull out a fourth. It's a stretch for the finger that most guitar players won't naturally go for. He had a very scientific approach to his art. He was very methodic, and he was exactly the teacher I needed at the time, because I had no organization for the way I was approaching the instrument. He had a very scientific approach, an example saying, okay, that's a major scale, and you learn it, and you have a major scale here, here, and here, and here. Find as many different ways as you can finger a major scale, and that way you will have the greatest knowledge of the instrument, the development of the year, and the maximum ability for your technique to develop. So that was his approach. Very scientific. Number two, he ran the gamut. He explored every possibility that he possibly could to make his playing interesting. Again, from single note playing to interesting chordal features to low note stuff, very high notes, to even some harmonics and all the possible things he could do with getting his sounds out and interpreting a phrase.
And Wes Montgomery became very important to you.
Yes. I spent a lot of time with Wes Montgomery's records. He played with his thumb. That was the very identifiable thing with Wes. And the story with Kim goes that he was a janitor. He was working as a janitor. He got home in the middle of the night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and he lived very humbly in a small apartment with his wife, and he'd go into his room and start to practice, and his wife complained that he was making too much noise with the pick because it would go right through the walls, you know. So he put the pick down and then started to play with his thumb, you know. Now, then later on, as he developed his solos, he had also block chord style solos he would use. He would do things like that. He would do some things like that. But what he really made famous was a restatement of the octave again. I say that because Django used octaves.
Wes, you mean?
I'm sorry, Wes did, yeah. So he would play with his thumb octaves. And that took off, just took off like crazy.
Well, Michael, let's listen to some of your records.
All right, sounds good.
Let's listen to The Breeze and I. Where does that come from?
The Breeze and I, it's an old Spanish tune. It's a beautiful old Spanish tune called Andalusia. But the American title is The Breeze and I. As you know, many Spanish tunes were popularized in America and then given American lyrics, etc. I had an inspiration actually got the inspiration from Wes Montgomery, one of his records where he played it up in a fast four. So I got the idea and worked out this arrangement.
Why did you write this song, Recollections of H.R.?
Well, in love of for my mentor, Howard, who was like a, you know, Howard and Joe, those guys were like uncles to me, very much.
What is the structure of this song?
I'm glad you asked that, because that's what I was trying to remember to say and couldn't remember. The song is based on, he was a very bluesy player, so it's a minor blues, it's in B minor, and then it moves to F minor. It's based off a pattern. He wrote a composition once for a book. Howard's was based on this B minor-y pattern, and I took the first part of his pattern and made an extensive composition out of it. Thank you.
Your trio, they were on the HR tune?
Yes. And that was on that album, we called the album Natural Instincts, which we later named our trio, the Natural Instincts Trio. And David Parlato plays bass, Andrew Poling plays drums on both that both those examples, Up to the Breeze and I, and Recollections of HR.
Tell us about composing. How do you compose a tune? They come to you in a flash, or do you work on them for years?
Both. I've had tunes that I composed that came to me right away, and I'd had them finished, but like what I call right away is like 3 hours, and I'm staying with them, and 3 hours later I'm somewhat satisfied with what I have. Sometimes you have an idea for the melody first, and other times you're just sitting here messing around with the chords, you know, and you're just doing something like this. And you just like the feel of that. And you just keep working on that for a while. And then later on, you start to get an idea for maybe a melody that you like, they'll go with that. So in that case, the chords will come first, and I might work with the chords longer and see where I want to take them. And then later on, come back and say, okay, now I have to find something melodic that I like to go with that.
Michael, tell us about this Castellana piece of music.
Yes. Another whole aspect of my guitar explorations, I got into flamenco guitar for about 10 years, wanting to enjoy that and find out, you know, learn how flamenco players do what they do. I took that tune, I transcribed it from a Sabicas record. And as you may or may not know, Sabicas was one of the people, the great people, that brought flamenco from Spain to America. And he was a phenomenal guitarist, just a phenomenal flamenco player. This particular piece I had on a tape of his, one piece was with dancing and singing and all of the stuff. And then the next piece was a solo piece. And I heard this piece and I said, I've got to learn to play that. And I went looking all over for the music and there was none. So it was then before me to have the task of taking it off the record note by note, writing it out, and then learning to play it.
I want to know from my own personal, there's two guitarists on that Castellana thing.
Nope.
That's one guitar?
That's one guitar. That's me. That's little old me.
Michael, how many guitars? Tell us how many guitars do you have?
Oh, well, I'm down to 23.
No!
Any studio guitar player in Los Angeles had at least 20 guitars, okay? 20 instruments, let me put it that way. I'm counting the banjos and the ukuleles and all of the odd instruments, the bouzouki, the Greek bouzouki. I still keep that. My electric sitar. And if so-and-so had a hit on a certain guitar, well, you know, that damned all the rest of us because they'd say, hey, can you play like so-and-so or like Larry Carlton or like Joe Cocker? And have you got the guitar, you know, that they used? So that's why we were all chasing after whatever the hit was and using those sounds and using those instruments. And that helped us to perpetuate our work. So hence, bunches of instruments.
So tell us about this Gibson. It's a 1940s. What year is it?
This is, I'm told, about 1942, and it's a Gibson L7. The L5s were kind of the popular ones, but the L7s were the next. It's got a very sweet sound to it. And, well, I've always loved the tone.
Do you play guitar in your dreams?
Yes, many times I do. Those are some of my best dreams because I play perfectly in my dreams.
Guitarist Michael Anthony, interviewed by Mark Weber. To learn more about Michael Anthony and to hear more from our session, visit our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org, for more profiles of jazz musicians with New Mexico ties. Support for this series comes from the New Mexico Humanities Council and from the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. I'm Paul Ingalls.